Good morning and welcome to Radio Smart Talk. I'm Craig Cohen. When comedian George Burns was in his 80s and 90s, he joked that every morning the first thing he did when he woke up was to open up the newspaper to the obituary section and look to see if his name was in it. If it wasn't, he had breakfast. If it was, Burns said he still had breakfast because, you know, he didn't want to go on an empty stomach. Obituaries are among the most popular and widely read features in any newspaper. Some readers look to see if they know any of the deceased. Others compare their age with the recently departed. Still others read obituaries because they tell compelling stories. That's nearly always been the case for the more long-form remembrances of prominent figures. But for many newspapers today, even death notices for lesser-known individuals are increasingly presented as stories of people's lives that describe their accomplishments, their interests, their relationships, and even in some cases, their disappointments. It takes a special talent to write a remembrance, to celebrate a life while still offering an honest reflection on the legacy the deceased left behind. And we have two guests with us this morning who know this pretty well. Reporter T.W. Berger joined the Patriot News in 2001. His articles and columns for the Patriot include remembrances of community figures, and you can also find his Berger to Go blog at wordpress.com. Terry Berger, welcome to Radio Smart Talk.
Hi, Craig. How you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for being with us. And Michael Schaefer has reported for U.S. News and World Reports in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he's the author of One Nation Under Dog, about culture and the American pet industry. But he joins us today because of his weekly gig as the Grim Reader, a column for Obit magazine in which he reports and reviews how various media outlets have covered the passing of prominent figures. Michael Schaefer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us. As we begin our discussion, as always, we welcome your questions and comments, but we also would like to know, if you could write your own obituary, what would you want it to say? Let us know. Call us at 1-800-729-7532. Send your email to smarttalk@witf.org or text us at 35253. Just be sure to type WITF, leave a space, then text your comment. The phone number again is 1-800-729-7532. Let me start with a question for both of you, and I'll pose this to Michael first off. What makes for a good remembrance? I mean, you read a lot of these things. What stands out or impresses you?
I think when you can get something of the real person in there, and it's really hard to do, I mean, particularly in American newspapers where we have a culture of, someone dies today, you get an obit in there tomorrow or the next day. And if you're an obit writer and you've got large numbers of obits to write up, it's very hard to get more than just would appear on the CV, because that's the stuff you can verify, that's the stuff where there's paperwork to prove that so-and-so was a major in the Marine Corps or what have you. It's harder to get, he used to really like to sing old ballads when he was drinking, and it sure was fun to hang out with him at the bar and that kind of stuff, because it's harder to verify and it requires a little more labor. But those are and that's increasingly prominent, that kind of a real person obit, and that's really the best kind of thing for me.
Terry, what makes for a good remembrance?
I agree totally with him. I often say every now and then I speak to school groups or something like this, and I always say that there's no such thing as a boring person. They're only bad writers. sometimes I wonder, maybe I'm a bad writer, because there are some people out there where you have to dig a little deeper. But the problem with any standard obituary in a newspaper is you just, like he said, you just kind of scratch the surface a little bit and then you move on. And that's really sad because, this person was on the earth for 85 years or however, and this is their last shot. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah, Terry, also, there's a difference, isn't there, between the sort of remembrance that you and other reporters will write and maybe the death notices that family members will, in many cases, pay the newspaper to publish?
Oh, yeah, those latter ones are basically just basic facts. This so-and-so, age such and such of... LeMoyne or wherever, died on Tuesday. Stuff like that. A formal obituary is formal. They're pretty formulaic. And they get just the very basic stuff. And remembering is, you go back and talk to people they worked with, to family, to friends. If you're lucky, and I mean that in terms of storytelling, you get people who weren't necessarily friends, who you're willing to say the things, he was a jerk sometimes. But again, and that's it, for especially for a remembrance, a remembering story, those kind of things you have to be very careful with, because their family and friends are going to read them, and And we're talking about the people who don't normally get in the newspaper, except their, you know, for their birth notice and their death notice, and you know, maybe occasional run-in with the police here and there. But these are people whose stories normally don't get told.
So. I would imagine it's a difficult balance to strike because in one way, you're as a journalist, you're thinking to yourself, well, I should report the facts of this person's life. And if one of the facts was that maybe there were some people that didn't get along with this person very well, maybe that should be a part of this story. But on the other side of it, you're thinking about family and friends who are grieving, and what's the best way to both report but also honor this life?
Yeah, and it's one of those things I think you have to make that decision based on each remembrance you're writing because... Well, you know, a number of factors go into it. You know, how much of a public figure, if any, were they? You know, if it's a nice little old lady who ran a gardening club for 75 years or so, and you talk to another nice little old lady who really didn't like her, well, you know, I mean, how important is it that somebody didn't? I mean, everybody has people who don't like them. Especially newspaper reporters.
Broadcasters as well. Michael, what trends are you noticing as you, I imagine you peruse a lot of reports about notable deaths. Are there certain types of people written about more often or in certain ways in newspapers and in other media across the country?
Well, you know, like you said, I write, my column tends to look at how, you know, some famous person's death was played in different places, like George Steinbrenner last week. He's, you know, we've got an obituary pretty much everywhere. And I tend to look at how they are interpreted differently. You know, with Steinbrenner, for instance, here is a guy who for much of his life was really reviled. People thought, boy, this guy is a total jerk. He's imperious. He's lousy to his subordinates. He is also, for a long time, people thought he's also ruining a baseball franchise. The Yankees had a bunch of terrible years that people have concluded were largely due to Steinbrenner's impulsive decisions to sign these over-the-hill has-been types to big contracts and so on. In the last decade of his life, after he was suspended and so on and was sort of removed from the game, the Yankees again became really, really, really good. And Steinbrenner kind of reinvented his reputation. Instead of being this, you know, horrible boss, he was this sort of wise old man who had brought together the passion and the money to make this all happen. And you saw in his obituaries that some of the outlets really kind of bought it and used the spin that had been created in the last decade of his life. Here's a guy who, you know, he may have been beastly to his managers, but he gave to charity and he anonymously helped out people whose sad cases he read about in the paper and so on. Neither story is completely true because human beings are complex. We are not either all bad or all good. But it was interesting to me watching how different places took different spins on Steinbrenner.
This is Radio Smart Talk. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guests are Patriot News reporter and columnist Terry Berger and Michael Schaefer, who writes the Friday Grim Reader column for Obit Magazine. We're discussing the subtle craft of writing obituaries, and we welcome your questions and comments. But we also would like to know, if you could write your own obituary, what would you like it to say? It could be the last thing anyone writes about you. How would you like to be remembered? Just maybe one or two sentences would do. They could be serious. They could be silly about a specific accomplishment or attitude or relationship. Really anything at all. But what above all else would you like people to read about you when you die? Call us at 1-800-729-7532. Send your email to smarttalk@witf.org, or you can text us at 35253. Just be sure to type WITF, then leave a space, then type your question or comment. Our phone number again is 1-800-729-7532. You can also post your own obituary, if you wish, on today's program post at WITF.org. And gentlemen, I'd like to share a few that have already come in, just a few examples of what some folks would like maybe to be remembered for or how they'd like to be remembered. One of them posted to WITF.org by Matthew Gillespie. He first of all indicates what he wants to be the headline which is refusal to believe in a higher authority gives man more time to enjoy final days of life, multiple theme parks, less time to wonder if childhood pets await him in heaven. It's entertaining, but a very lengthy headline, I have to say.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if that'll fit in.
It wouldn't make the cut.
Maybe too many column inches.
Yeah.
All right, so here's what he wrote. He says, after better than expected quarterly earnings, Matthew Gillespie has been promoted to the Kingdom of Heaven. Previously, Mr. Gillespie held the position of network engineer systems developer at a local company where he excelled in network engineering and system developing. God, who didn't immediately return our phone call, is said to have been mildly impressed with Mr. Gillespie's performance. While the new position has no apparent benefit, Mr. Gillespie will undoubtedly enjoy a very laid-back environment. Family and friends are invited to a celebration on behalf of this new promotion at the local church in New Cumberland shortly after his firing. Very entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
We also asked a number of WITF staffers if they would share their suggestions. And some of them were serious, and then some of them were silly. And let me give you one that I thought was a serious one and a very nice one. Debbie Reek says, I think I would want mine to say that I understood children and helped other people to understand them, too.
Oh, that's very nice.
I think that's a great, you know, and what we're looking for this morning could be that simple. Just, is there something in particular about you that you'd like to be remembered for? Call us and let us know. Send your email, send your text. Let's see. Here's another one. I enjoy this one. This is from Joanne Cassaro. She says, obit, Joanne Cassaro died suddenly Sunday night at the age of 99. Her husband found her body with hand-spun yarn tangled around her ankles after slipping on a slab of clay. Fettling knife wound apparently the cause of death after falling directly onto it. Her husband said, I guess she was tired from being jerked around by crafts. It's fitting that she went out doing what she loved to do. In lieu of flowers, all contributions should go to the ACA, American Crafters Anonymous. Burial ceremony at sea will be held after a group sand sculpture in Año Nuevo State Park, California. Friends and family and creative strangers are welcome to participate. What I love about that is you immediately probably don't know Joanne. I know Joanne, and of course I know folks on the WITF staff, but you get an immediate sense of who the person was, what her interest was. And so how much can be built into a paragraph about someone's life?
Well, quite a bit. And, you know, one of the advantages you have to having an important local person, somebody who's in the news a lot, you know, all newspapers and news outlets have somebody who writes somebody's obituary long before they die, and they keep updating it so that when, you know, you're not caught unawares, you know, unprepared, rather. With the remembering stories, you're doing somebody who, let's say we're, you know, a common letter to the editor writer, you know, you don't have a lot of stuff on, you know, text on who they were and what they were. So you have to get that from their friends. And it's kind of emotionally wearing when you're talking to somebody who's really deeply grieving somebody, you know. But on the other hand, and I say this very often, I said the worst part of writing rememberings is you're discovering all these really interesting people that you're never going to get to meet. That's very frustrating.
Some of this also, though, Michael, applies even to people that maybe are more famous or, as you describe in this week's column, and I don't know how you characterized it, but almost sort of semi-famous. You highlighted a few folks who passed this week, including one of them was actor James Gammon. And you wrote in your column that Gammon was the sort of character actor the obitosphere seems happiest to reduce to a physical description. Why does that happen sometimes? Are there certain cliches about remembrances and obituaries that tend to crop up like that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, it with these sort of semi-prominent people, you really do get the sense of our pop culture hierarchy. If you know, when George Clooney dies, there will be a full obit about his real life and, you know, what things may have shaped his approach to acting and what things may have shaped how he carried himself in Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera. When it's a character actor or a singer who's had one hit song or something like that, it's much more, you know, he had a gruff voice, he played cowboys, that kind of thing. And much less of a kind of examination of what kind of really serious forces, you know, his mom left home when he was three and that set him on a path to singing songs about loneliness or something like that. Those, what kind of serious forces really shaped somebody's creative being. And, you know, there are all kinds of different factors that go into what sort of play someone gets in the obits, including who else died the day they happened to die. I remember when Dominic Dunn died, mm-hmm. there was a story in the New York Times about how his family or people around him had tried to hold the news to keep people from finding out because he died the same day as Teddy Kennedy, and he didn't want the Teddy Kennedy obits to swamp his. So if you have the good fortune of dying on a day when no one famous has died, you maybe get a little bit more room. And this speaks, goes back to something that's true of whether it's a famous person or a normal person, which is that a lot of the richness and detail and thoughtfulness of an obit has to do with how much time the writer gets to do the reporting. It's very, as you said, it's really tough to do your reporting when you're calling people who are grieving for a family member or a friend or even an enemy that has just died. Some of the papers in England actually wait a little while longer between the death and when the obit runs. And both that gives the reporters time to do more reporting. It also, I think, means that your sources, the people you're talking to, are going to be less affected by the shock of the death and more able to kind of reflect on the person without undue amounts of nostalgia and sentimentality, and that's a good thing.
This is Radio Smart. Oh, sorry.
No,
you wanted to pop in, Terry?
I agree totally. Giving it a little time, and generally speaking, our rememberings are done a week or two after the person dies, sometimes not. But that does give people a little bit time to collect themselves and be a little bit more out of that very emotional state. But occasionally, I just worked on one that was recently that had just happened, and it was a lot harder. I mean, on me, too. You always feel like a real heel, calling in. You realize, we just got back from the service, and you just say, oh, gosh, one of the downsides of doing these things is, we're all multitasking in the modern news industry. So I may be working on a remembrance one week, but I'm also working on, a business story and maybe, one other, like a Sunday front page piece. So it's a matter of you're always juggling other things, and that's just a reality. It's not going to get any better.
This is Radio Smart Talk. I'm Craig Cohen. My guests are Patriot News reporter and columnist Terry Berger and Michael Schaefer, who writes the Friday Grim Reader column for Obit Magazine. We're discussing the subtle craft of writing obituaries. We welcome your questions and comments, and we also welcome your own obituary. If you could write your own after you shuffle off this mortal coil, what would you like it to say? Share even just one or two sentences with us. Your answer could be serious. It could be silly. It could be about a specific personality trait or accomplishment or attitude or relationship. What, above all else, would you like people to read about you when you pass away? To share your obituary or to ask any questions of our guests about writing remembrances, call us at 1-800-729-7532. Send your email to smarttalk@witf.org or text us at 35253. If you do text us, just remember to type WITF, leave a space, then type your question or comment. The phone number again is 1-800-729-7532. Also, you can also post your own obituary if you went on today's program post at WITF.org. We've had a couple come in. We have one who just wanted to pass along one phrase that she would like included. Carla says, she's from Washington, PA, and she says, I'd like it to be remembered that I had an infectious laugh. Well, that's great.
I like that.
I like that too. Art in Harrisburg has a question. He says, 40 years ago, when I was a newspaper reporter, the obituaries were written by the new guy, the low man on the totem pole. Has that really changed?
Well, it's an interesting thing. In our newspaper, the obits, of course, the funeral homes very often write an obit, and they're usually edited up when they get here. Currently, the basic obits and death notices and stuff are done by people in our classified department. Kind of the reporters themselves don't write them. Now, we do the obit stories, when somebody notable in the area dies. And, of course, there are, I believe it's four of us who take turns writing the rememberings. So it's different than it used to be. And it used to be when a smaller paper I worked at. I worked at the Gettysburg Times for some year. And whoever answered the phone got the obit. This is the days before email and stuff. But it was just whoever happened to be there and picked the phone up. If it was this funeral home or the other, you saved whatever you were working on. You wrote the obit, and then you went back to what you were working on. There's a way of writing obits for every newspaper that's out there.
If you're a writer, if your correspondent hasn't worked in news service for 40 years, you may not be aware that there's not a whole lot of new guys. You know, it's there is, and I don't know if it's always been this way, but certainly there is now a class of obit writers who really wanted to be obit writers, who specialize in obit writing. And if you look at the big papers of the country, you look at the Washington Post, you look at the New York Times, the names above a lot of the obits are actually people who for whom that was their career choice. They're not just the person who's being put out to pasture or the newbie who didn't have a choice about where they were going to land. And you see some really high-quality stuff that reflects that. You know, people who, you know, they say journalism is the first draft of history. Well, maybe then obits are the first draft of biography. And you see people who are really keen on telling those stories.
I want to share with the two of you a couple of examples of actual obits that that sort of gained some notoriety or at least are particularly interesting. One of them comes to us courtesy of WITF CEO Kathleen Pavelko, who saw it recently in the New York Times. Selma Koch, a Manhattan store owner who earned a national reputation by helping women find the right bra size, mostly through a discerning glance and never with a tape measure, died Thursday at Mount Sinai Medical Center. She was 95 and a 34B. That doesn't seem to happen as often, you know, that sort of creative writing approach to obituaries. I want to give you another one. This goes back to 2004, and this is one that, for better or worse, Tom and Ray Maliazzi of Car Talk made famous, and it's from the Daily Item in Sunbury, which posted an obituary and gained a lot of fame thanks to Tom and Ray. Former Bucknell University English professor Louis Casimir did, in fact, write his own obituary. And I'll read just a few of the more enlightening sentences. Again, this is from the Daily Item from February 2004. Louis J. Casimir, Jr. bought the farm Thursday, February 5th, 2004, having lived more than twice as long as he had expected and probably three or four times as long as he deserved. For more than six decades, he smoked, drank, and ate lots of animal fat, but never had a serious illness or injury. Lou was a daredevil. His last words were, "Watch this." I wonder if obituaries and remembrances would be vastly different if we were all tasked with writing our own, and if that was part of the society.
I think they would be. I think our, and I've, you know, never really researched this, but I have a feeling that our standard newspaper obit sort of drew out of the Victorian age, where everybody wore black and it was all very somber and all this, and this was a thing for grieving. But you know, I think that's changing. I mean, just given that wonderful obit, I should have that printed out and hang it on my cubicle wall. But I did one of my earlier rememberings. I just happened to run into a guy who was infamous for writing lots of letters to the editor to our paper. He was of American Indian descent. His name was Jimmy Little Turtle. And I mean, people were flooding me with calls. I didn't even really have to make that many calls, but everybody was talking. And my lead basically said, even his friends said Jimmy Little Turtle was a pain in the patoot. Because he was, that's him. He was a very pleasant fellow, but he was argumentative and was a constant source of letters to the editor. And they were pretty excitable, let's just say. But I have, when I was first put on this team to write the remembrances, you know, I'm thinking, oh God, you know, just another thing we have to just put this out. And very quickly, I really fell in love with it. I like doing it. There are some stresses. You're talking to people who've just lost somebody very important to them. But that chance to do that kind of writing about somebody else and discover that person, like I said, it's very often frustrating. You think, every now and then I write something about somebody I knew for one reason or another, and that's different. But what you're doing is you're being introduced to someone, like I said earlier, who's just a fascinating person. You realize this person was out there. I may have walked past them in the street sometime and never got to know them. And boy, what did I miss, you know, that sort of thing.
Michael, what's your favorite remembrance of all that you've read? Are there one or two maybe that stand out to you?
Well, you know, I think there's sort of two ways to answer that. One of them is just some of these incredible lives that you didn't know about. I mean, I remember maybe a couple months ago when Dorothy Height, the civil rights leader, died, And, you know, I had actually encountered her as a reporter a couple times when I was a reporter. And, you know, by that point, she was a sort of grand dame of the movement and was treated with great deference and all of that. But actually reading about the stuff she had gone through in her life was just incredible. You know, we, particularly with people who are who are older and who've kind of achieved legendary status, it's very easy to elide over the things they actually did as young, obscure people to become the legends they eventually became. And that, I found Heitz Obitz particularly moving. I mean, this is a person who you know, won a scholarship from her small town to college in New York, showed up. They wouldn't let her in because she was black. She took the subway downtown, went to NYU, you know, didn't let anything stop her. And, you know, and I just, something about reading those Obitz made me think of, you know, what must it have been like to be, you know, 18 years old, the best student in your small town, show up at a prestigious college and be turned away like that. I found that really moving. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it is when you just see something where the writing is so incredible, like the Bra obituary you just cited. I think particularly in the British papers, there is a tradition. There's a little bit of a less sentimental approach to death, and so more willingness to be snarky and to be mean, or just to have fun with language. And I really like pieces like that as well.
You're listening to Radio Smart Talk, a daily current events-driven program produced by WITF to provide a forum for the exchange of information and ideas and to provide an opportunity for our listeners to engage on a range of relevant topics. Capital Blue Cross has agreed to partner with WITF to make this program available to the communities we serve. Support also comes from Pinnacle Health, serving central Pennsylvania for over 100 years. Pinnacle Health offers primary care services to complex surgeries in multiple locations throughout the region. More information available at pinnaclehealth.org. Pinnacle Health. Proven. I'm Craig Cohen. We're discussing the craft of writing obituaries with Patriot News reporter and columnist T.W. Berger and Michael Schaefer, who writes the Friday Grim Reader column for Obit Magazine. If you would like to speak with our guests or share what you would like your obituary to read, you can call us this morning at 1-800-729-7532. Send your email to smarttalk@witf.org or text us at 35253. That number again is 1-800-729-7532. And you can also post your own obituary on today's program post at WITF.org. I am being told that we're having some phone problems this morning. That's why we haven't had any calls come in, but we're trying to work those out right now. We'll hopefully have some folks on the air in just a few minutes. But again, you can send in your emails to smarttalk@WITF.org or text us or post comments to the website. And let me share a number of those that have come in. Tom writes that he wants in his obit for it to say, he lived his motto, always be the person your dog thinks you are.
I like that.
I like that. You were telling me, Terry, that you recently or a while back did a remembrance of a dog, and that was among your most popular.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. In fact, I just learned yesterday that when I wrote that, there was some discussion in the editorial meeting about whether we were going to, you know, do a remembering on a dog. But the dog's name was Nitro. He was a bomb-sniffing dog at Harrisburg International Airport. And he'd, you know, been on that duty for quite a while, and then he retired, and of course his handler kept him at home. But he had passed away, and, you know, and it was really something. I was talking to people who knew Nitro, and they were getting as emotional as they might with a human. And I ran it, I mean, as straightforward as you could write remembering an obituary story about a dog. And the feedback was wonderful. I mean, sometimes some of it was very emotional. I mean, people would call me, and you know, people don't usually call about one of these things. They'll send an email or something like that. But it was really heartening. I wanted to do more pet obit stories, but I think the market for that's kind of limited.
Well, you know, but I wonder if Michael has any thoughts on that, because you've got sort of this sort of combines your two major interests and your job.
I think you can't go wrong writing about pets. You know, the difference between pets and humans is that humans are vastly more complex, and we think our attitude with pets is that, you know, they don't deserve it. They don't deserve to get sick. They don't deserve to die. They don't deserve to be hurt. They don't even know what's happening. And it makes the death of a pet, like sort of like the death of a child, just an incredibly difficult and painful thing. But people love to tell stories about their pets, And even if the stories all fit into one of three categories, they're either stories about how loyal they are or what a disaster they are, or how the human grew by learning things from their loyal pet. Even despite that, I think we have really a sort of very deep capacity to hear stories about pets, those of us who love them. And, I think if you go to an old pet cemetery, and I wrote about this in my book, if you go to an old pet cemetery and you look at the gravestones, the oldest pet cemetery in the country is from like the 1890s. It's about 110, 120 years old outside of New York City. And if you look at the oldest headstones, it'll say, here lies Fido, a loyal servant. And as you get into the 20th century and you look at the gravestones, it'll be, here lies Fido, man's best friend. And the newest of the gravestones say things like, my little boy, or our little girl, mommy and daddy miss you, that sort of thing. I mean, really, you really visibly get the sense of how we have promoted these animals to being kind of honorary children. Our treatment of their death reflects that.
I think we maybe have our phone problems resolved. Let's go to Virginia and Landisburg. Virginia.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to share a comment about Jimmy Little Turtle. Years ago, I had a boyfriend who went there to buy me a gift. And he bought...
Virginia. Oh, okay. Well, I guess that didn't work. I don't know what happened there, but we're clearly still having some phone problems. I apologize to Virginia. Oh, well, let's move on. We also have some other comments here from the website. Somebody suggested they want in their obit. I tried to help out as much as I could. You're all on your own now. I like that one a great deal. Here's an interesting question posted to the website. My biggest problem is with newspapers that charge money for obits. When they are paid, they are so poorly written. Their run-on sentences and puffery are the ultimate examples of writing. Yuck. This is a part of what we're talking about, that there's a difference sort of between the remembrances that you'll write, Terry, and what maybe paid death notices in a newspaper that a family member might write. And are you finding that the there tends to be more of what the person's describing, sort of run-on sentences and puffery?
I think we could talk all day about why people who, are not, if you will, trained writers write in one way and the rest of us don't. But actually, I posted something on my Facebook page yesterday that I was going to be doing this, and I got a lot of feedback on there, a lot of it from people who do what I do. And there was a lot of discussion about this. And I confess, when we first went to the paid obituaries and we'd get some of these things all flowery and everything, and I was a little bit more used to it because I grew up in the South, and I'm sorry, but Southerners do English better than you Yankees do. it's a lot more metaphorical and can be quite flowery. But At first, I kind of looked down my nose, and I'd read stuff, and I'd say, oh, my God, they'd beat me if I wrote a sentence like that. But, to borrow the name of a famous play, whose life is it anyway? This isn't an English class. This is somebody wanting to get out the last word about somebody they cared about. Now, true, you find, as one of my friends posted, he said, you get family feuds in there, and sometimes they'll leave out one whole side of the family because they're mad at them. So, and you get your facts wrong and stuff like that, but I don't know what to do about that. But a lot of them have their own kind of charm to them.
Yeah.
And you read them aloud and just say, and some of the sentences you read aloud and everybody goes, wow.
That was a sentence and a half. Yeah.
That one had bells and lace.
I think they're really just two completely separate entities, because, the thing is that T.W. and I are, we are quote-unquote professional writers, which is a skill that the market is rewarding with diminishing returns.
Yes.
But all the same, we're not supposed to do run-on sentences and cliches and stuff. We are also supposed to be reporters, and I think one of the kind of cardinal rules of journalism is that institutions and people, particularly powerful people, don't get to tell their own story. The president doesn't get to write the story of his budget, or doesn't get to tell the story of why he made some decision. We're supposed to, and we're not supposed to take anyone's word for it. We're supposed to provide balance, and we're supposed to provide critical inquiry. And the same goes for when someone dies, particularly when someone who is powerful dies. George Steinbrenner doesn't get to tell his story when he dies. He may have a story to tell, but and his critics may have a story to tell, and our job is to go in and get something approximating the truth. And that's different than when a member of your family dies. You don't want to tell the truth when a member of your family dies. You want to remember them, and you want to express your sorrow and your love. This may be branding myself as a hopeless Yankee, but when my grandmother died, you know, we wrote a paid remembrance of her and kind of made a decision not to use adjectives. You know, we didn't say, you know, loving grandmother to so-and-so and dear sister to so-and-so, because we felt like all of that was implied. And so we just sort of made it just the facts, because we felt like to try to use any adjectives would be really to selling her to be selling her short, because it was so much more than what words could describe. That was our view as her family. But a journalist or a writer, who's someone who came in and, you know, did their due diligence and interviewed all of us and told her story, might have come up with some other way to tell it, and that would have just been a very different creature entirely.
Let's try again with the phones here. We'll go to Jeannie in Mechanicsburg. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I was wondering if putting so much information in an obituary actually gives fodder to identity thieves.
Well, that's an interesting thought, you know, because especially there's a tendency to want to put as many relationships as possible in obituaries. If it's somebody that's calling in, you know, and doing a paid death notice, they'll want to have, you know, great grandfather of so and so and such, and maybe in developing those relationships, is that a concern, or is there just not necessarily the kind of personal information that might go in there that would create a problem?
I don't think there's anything in an obituary that couldn't be found, you know, in the phone book. There's even less information there. Post social security numbers or phone numbers or even specific addresses.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm not that high tech, so I don't know if you could steal anything out of an obit. But
yeah,
it's an interesting question.
Like that.
Yeah. Let's go next to Jim in Harrisburg. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. A show that hits close to home, as I've been asked to prepare a few obituaries, family members, and I got great accolades, I might add, so move over. I don't know if there's room for another in this business.
There's not.
Yeah, well, beyond that, I also eulogize them and then have been given the opportunity, or I would say honored, to eulogize two of my law partners who died somewhat untimely, but as older men. And I've even got one in waiting. A friend of mine and I have agreed that we will eulogize each other, and depending on who wins. So you've answered my first question there. Number one, there's no future in it for me. But two, I found, certainly with people I know, my family particularly, but with the other gentlemen, that there is, even there, a cathartic effect from both trying to capture in few words the essence of their life in an obituary that is interesting, and far more so in eulogizing the person, that you really try to find the essence of who they were, and as a result, you know, there is some emotional price to pay as you do this, and you walk away feeling, I've always felt really honored and somewhat fulfilled or, you know, I don't know, exhausted, but very happy having had the opportunity to write and eulogize. And obviously, if you're doing it professionally and don't know the people, you would have less of that. But do you find that this is emotional?
Good question. Terry?
I do, very, very often. And it varies from person to person. I have to say I've often been tempted to write obituaries about people I know and don't like in hopes that they'll be useful sooner than later. But I have gotten, and some of these people, I'm a pretty empathetic person. I think you kind of have to be to do this job with any real success. And then when you talk to people who have known and loved somebody for, you know, 20, 30, 50 years, and they talk about them, and you got this realization, you know, that this person is, you know, sounds really interesting and cool, you know, and you realize I'm never going to get to know this person. And so you end up kind of trying to find out all you can about it. And it's very much on an emotional level for me. And then of course you've got, you know, you, unfortunately, the reality is you've got maybe 20, 25 inches and you find out, you know, a wash tub full of stuff about this person. You say, okay, I've got to winnow through this and find just the best, you know, and, you know, sometimes you're more successful at that than others. I mean,
And I think, you know, one of the toughest things from an emotional level when you're, reporting an obituary is the fact that you still have to be a journalist and verify stuff. So someone says, "Oh, you know, Dad won a Bronze Star in the Korean War," and you have to say, "Well, can you send me the paperwork?" Because a lot of people tell their kids they won a Bronze Star and maybe didn't. And it's a difficult thing to ask someone who's grieving to then, you know, verify some of this information. You know, was Dad a colonel or was he a lieutenant colonel? What did, you know, that kind of stuff. One thing that's convenient about military stories is that it's relatively easy to get verification on stuff, but it is a challenge on all kinds of levels.
Yeah,
let's go next to Joe in Harrisburg. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. Just briefly, two things. First, I wanted to share my favorite New York Times obituary, but before that, many years ago, back in the early 70s, one of my first jobs was working at a small weekly newspaper in northern Pennsylvania, and back to your previous comments, as the new guy, I got all kinds of assignments. For example, I was the dead animal editor, which meant that every hunting season, when people would bring in their dead deer to have their picture taken for the paper, which was a big tradition in that town, I was the guy who took all the information and took the pictures. I also did the obituaries. And one of the things I found as being a person who was not born and raised there was I almost had to be an investigative reporter as well, because when I was collecting information, I very quickly found that many people took the opportunity of death as the time to settle scores once and for all.
Oh, yeah.
So you really needed to trust but verify. On to the New York Times, they have such great obituaries. You were talking about the woman who was the bra maker. My favorite one a few years ago, it really caught my eye, was you know, John Smith, 95, and the caption or the title was Voter.
Hmm.
Well, this turned out to be a guy who was living in Dixville Notch, New Hampshire. And as most people know, Dixville Notch has everybody, which is like 15, 20 people in the town, line up at midnight to vote. And they record their vote first in the country. Well, a tradition developed in that town that the oldest person would be designated as the voter. And he would be the person who was first in line to vote.
Wow.
And so the obituary tells a little bit about, you know, what this guy, who's a farmer, whatever he did, but also the history of this tradition and how it developed and who was next in line. And, you know, the Times obviously has the luxury, less so today, but still the luxury to do this. And I think a good obituary not only informs and educates, but also potentially can entertain a little bit. So those are my thoughts.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Want to be remembered as voter. I like that.
That's a good story.
Okay. I have to share a couple others with you. Of course, this one's a classic, if admittedly fake. Robert Johnson, owner of the Johnson's Movie Theater chain in Los Angeles, passed away Monday at the age of 65. Services will be held Thursday at 1210, 220, 430, 640, 850, and 11 o'clock. Yeah, it's an old joke, but I felt like I had to share it. Let's go next to Kate. Kate, good morning. Welcome.
Hi. This is Kate Edith Reinhardt from Catawissa, and I have my obituary. It will read, Kate Edith Reinhardt, an incorrigible punster, discovered that the last laugh was on her when the Grim Reaper said with a huge sigh, my dear, you can't have your Kate and Edith too.
Oh. Ooh. I don't feel so bad about the joke I just told. But thank you very much for that. That was great. All right, let me point out another one from WITF staffer, and a little more serious one. Mike Greenwald offered this. He says, I've often thought about writing my own obituary in the form of a message from me thanking the people who have enriched my life and mentioning the things that have given me the most satisfaction or of which I'm most proud.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That yeah. kind of puts the rest of us to shame, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
He routinely does that.
Well.
No. Again, we welcome your questions and comments at 800-729-7532. You can email us at smarttalk@witf.org or text us at 35253. Also, if you haven't had a chance to post or to comment on your own obituary, you could post it on today's program post at witf.org. We have another one on the website, My Obit, She Made Other Plans. It's very direct. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've done that one already. The one who had mentioned the infectious laugh corrected and said a booming infectious laugh.
Ah,
so
I had early in my reporting years, I had a colleague who, like me, had grown up in an area where there wasn't a real strong Catholic presence. So they had Catholic people in their obituaries, it usually says a mass of Christian burial.
Right.
Well, Mike had never heard the term, as I had not. So, but I asked somebody, what does that mean? And they told me how it was worded and what it was. But Mike just heard it and typed it in as a massive Christian burial.
Ah.
And Tim may remember that one. Yeah.
But before we let you go, I want to ask each of you, what would you like your own obituary to read? Michael?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that. I can't give you a line. I hope it'll do more than just repeat my mediocre resume. I hope it'll get into my friendships and my relationships and what I'm like when I'm on my own time, what I like to do at night, what I like to do on weekends, that kind of stuff, which is, maybe it's less novel. Guy likes to hang out with his kids. But there are ways, if you spend enough time with someone, you can say, he liked to sing these songs, or he really, really liked to grill things, or whatever it is. I just think that gets you much more of the real person than, he was a reporter here, he was an editor there, et cetera, et cetera.
Terry?
It's funny. I should have thought about this, given what the topic was going to be today, but I've never really given it much thought. I always tell people, I've been doing this for 25 years now, and I said, I've always, though there's always things you just hate covering, really terrible things, but more often than not, I find myself standing a few weeks ago, I was standing behind the pilot in a C-130 flying over the Atlantic Ocean, and I said, I'm getting paid for this. Is that a hoot or what? But I don't know how to translate that into a line and an obit.
Well, maybe that's the line.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the line right there.
Yeah.
I got paid to do that. What
yeah.
a hoot.
Yeah. Yeah. Or my last line, would maybe an epitaph would be, can I go home now?
Reporter Terry Berger joined the Patriot News in 2001. His articles and columns for the Patriot include remembrances of community figures, and you can also find his Berger to Go blog at wordpress.com. T.W. Berger, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Michael Schaefer has reported for U.S. News and World Reports, the Philadelphia Inquirer as well. He's the author of One Nation Under Dog, about culture and the American pet industry. And, of course, his weekly gig is as the Grim Reader, a column for Obit magazine, in which he reports and reviews how various media outlets have covered the passing of prominent figures. Michael Schaefer, thank you for being with us as well. On Monday, Radio Smart Talk will broadcast live from the Lebanon Area Fair to kick off a brand new initiative here at WITF. And to tell us more about that, it's called Real Life, Real Issues, and we're joined by WITF's Tim Lambert. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Craig. Pleasure to be here.
So, okay, what is Real Life, Real Issues? I've been hearing these announcements on air, Real Life, Real Issues, and I have no idea what it's talking about.
No idea. Well, Real Life, Real Issues is a new project we're launching here. It's going to be a monthly series of in-depth reports where WITF uses the full power of all its media here to cover one issue and in an in-depth way. So Real Life, Real Issues, we'll pick a particular topic each month, and you'll hear reports on WITF 89.5 and 93.3 in Chambersburg. You'll see stories on WITF TV. And the best thing about it is you'll be able to go to the website, WITF.org, and find all the information there, links to Central PA Magazine articles, links to organizations pertaining to the topic, video, photographs, all that fun stuff.
All right, so what will be the first subject? What's up first?
The first subject is county fairs in Pennsylvania and the future of county fairs and how they relate to their communities. We wanted a nice sort of lighter summer story to look at here, but when the state budget just passed, we realized that state funding was cut again for county fairs. There are more than 100 fairs across the state, and each one is impacted in some way by these budget cuts. So we're going to take a couple of trips to fairs. The Mason-Dixon Fair went on in Delta York County earlier this month. You'll be at the Lebanon Area Fair. I was there, and I'll also be there again while they were setting up, and I'll be there while it's underway. So we're going to take a look at how these organizations have been impacted.
And where will this be heard, seen, read?
Everywhere that is connected to WITF. There'll be a magazine. There'll be an article in the August issue of Central PA Magazine. Our first radio report will air on WITF 89.5 and 93.3 in Chambersburg on August 5th. Radio Smart Talk, of course, kicking it off a little early next week with the trip to the Lebanon Area Fair. And
we're not very good at following rules. Yeah, you said something about August, and we said, no, we're doing it in July.
Yeah, this is the way it's going to be. So, and then, of course, Smart Talk on WITF TV will have reports as well, and we'll have all kind of photos and videos online.
All right. So what other topics will WITF take on?
Oh, I don't know if I want to get into those. I don't want to tip our hand.
Oh, okay.
So I'm gonna pass on that.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then.
Am I allowed to do that?
Can I at least say this? Is it fair to say that as we close in on election season and the November election, we'll probably devote some time to the election?
That's one topic I think the cat can be out of the bag. Yeah, okay. We'll be trying to take in-depth looks at some of the candidates, the gubernatorial candidates, and also those running for U.S. Senate.
Now, if somebody has a suggestion for a future Real Life, Real Issues topic that we might want to address, should they contact you?
Absolutely. Or they can send it to news@WITF.org. That's news@WITF.org. And we'll make sure that it heads into our editorial meetings and will be fully considered.
Tim Lambert is, of course, the host of Morning Edition on WITF. He's also heading up WITF's new Real Life, Real Issues project. Tim, thanks for stopping in.
My pleasure, Craig. It's going to be a blast. I think this project's going to be very exciting for everyone involved.
The conversation continues at WITF.org, where I hope you'll share any comments you may have about today's program. And if we didn't get a chance to mention your obituary on air, share it on the website, where you can also listen back to this and all Radio Smart Talk programs. To find today's program post in the Smart Talk section of WITF.org, just click on the Smart Talk logo just about dead center on the main page, or find us under the news section at the top of the page. And remember, you can catch rebroadcasts of Radio Smart Talk weeknights at 7 on WITF 89.5 and 93.3 in Chambersburg. If you know people who might enjoy this program but aren't able to listen weekday mornings at 9, let them know about this second broadcast weeknights at 7. And of course, tell your out-of-town friends to check out old programs again anytime at WITF.org. You can also hear rebroadcasts of Radio Smart Talk each Saturday at 1, and tomorrow at 1, we will rebroadcast Tuesday's show with behavioral economist Dan Ariely, the author of The Upside of Irrationality. We discussed how human beings can and do act irrationally at times, but understanding why we act and think the way we do can enlighten us about everything from Wall Street bonuses to instant cake mixes. That conversation is Saturday at 1 on WITF. And then again on Monday, as WITF's new monthly Real Life, Real Issues series kicks off with a look at the impact of fairs in Pennsylvania, Radio Smart Talk will broadcast live from the Lebanon Area Fair, where we will discuss the future of agriculture, challenges facing farmers, and how fairs like Lebanon's are a part of the identity of rural America. My guests will include Pennsylvania Secretary of Agriculture Russell Redding and Sue Werner, chairperson of the Lebanon Area Fair. Hope you can join us in person or on the air. That's Monday morning at 9 here on WITF. Today's program was produced by Scott Lamar. Lindsay Dunn screened your calls. I'm Craig Cohen.